Welcome to AMD Tech Talk, your source for the latest in data center innovation and insight on AMD's latest technology breakthroughs. And now here's your host, Jim Green.
Thanks for listening today. Our guest is Gina Rosenthal, principal at Digital Sunshine Solutions. Gina, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on today.
Our pleasure. You mind starting with a little bit of a background on yourself and your role and how you help organizations navigate today's changing IT landscape?
So I have a long history in tech. Started out at EMC and storage doing training, was a sysadmin for a while, was one of the first bloggers at EMC, and Dell noticed some of the community work I was doing. So they grabbed me and brought me back down south, which I was appreciative of. And I built Dell's storage community. All of a sudden, all of that kind of went away and became really important to do product marketing. So that's what I've done for a long time. And Digital Sunshine Solutions is an agency where we do fractional product marketing work with different technical companies, primarily infrastructure companies. And that's what I do. That's how I interact with customers. I do all sorts of things for my clients who are providing the infrastructure for their clients to actually get all sorts of things done. So I interact in a kind of roundabout way through my customers and lots of research for my customers.
Well, that must give you a pretty good perspective given the cross-section of customers and customers that you get to deal right. with. So that's exactly why we wanted to chat today. So tell me a little bit about what trends or obstacles you're seeing in the industry right now amongst that diverse base, and how are businesses adapting to and managing priorities amongst all these challenges?
I think everybody's kind of running around like a chicken with the head cut off. And the ones that aren't, they've got it under control, but I think everybody's really worried. And there's a lot to worry about in this world. Data centers are primarily, they seem to be pretty stable. All of our data is digitized. So it needs to be there. The jobs need to be there. That service needs to be there. Although that's changed over the years, right? So we've got cloud, we've got SaaS, we've got all of a sudden automation with AI. Who would have ever thought that would come about? So what does that all mean? And then you have all sorts of different workloads. We're at this kind of crossroads with IT in our industry in general. And I saw this when I came into the industry in 2001, and people were trying to figure out, well, do we do three-tier architecture? What do we do for storage? How do we get off a mainframe? What is a website? Do we really need a website? How do we support it? Is that going to be a real thing? And all of a sudden, we're seeing a big change to what's a GPU? What's a DPU? Do I really need to have that? What is AI? Is it real? Do I need to have an agentic AI structure and plan? What is all this stuff? So I think we're at this place where are things real? And they are, and almost are, but how do you plan for that when everything seems to be changing even more rapidly than ever? I think there's a lot of, what do we do? How do we plan?
Yeah, I'm not Nostradamus, but I believe that internet thing's going to catch on, that old World Wide Web. Maybe. So has a good chance, really good chance. All right, so great. There is a lot of angst. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of urgency with new mandates coming down all the time here. We're also seeing, and I think you and I have talked a little bit about the concept of IT inflation and how many companies are dealing with this and how to manage it all. What are some of the more pressing issues that organizations are facing to make them have to grapple with this concept?
Just refresh my memory just so I answer this right about IT inflation. What do you mean when you say that again?
So we are talking about the level of investment it takes to have a baseline functional set of IT infrastructure, right? You talked earlier about how increasingly the information is the business. Even if you're an online manufacturing company, your information is still essential to your business. So the whole concept of IT inflation, the cost of participating in that digital economy, if you will, in the digital aspects of the business world today, what are some of the big tectonics causing challenge there?
So I think there's a few things kind of already touched on them, but bigger things too, right? So we've got the new workloads coming in. We've got the new abilities with chips and servers and storage, all the new things. You've got a choice between do you run it, do you host it? But then you have to also think about things like power. Power is a huge deal right now. Power is a huge deal because there's only so much of it. There's only so much you can put in a building. And if you need more and more power to run more and more servers, more and more storage, where's that going to come from? And then with power, you've got the cooling aspect of it. How are you going to cool those? And that takes an enormous amount of water. That's why when you see the big data centers, the new data centers for the Googles and the Metas and everything, they're usually in rural areas in the South near water, because you need that infrastructure. You need to be able to build that infrastructure with cheap enough power, and then you have to have a way to cool it. So there's things like that. Security is the other thing. Security is a huge business. So you have these teams, actually, and then you have nation states that want to get that information and liberate it for themselves for dastardly deeds or money, most often money, right? And what is happening on top of all of that is we're moving towards quantum. So when quantum computing comes up, and there's now mandates from the U.S., if you're working with the U.S. government, that you've got to have your equipment aligning in a certain way to be quantum ready in the next 2 years. We're that close to quantum. So how do you plan? How do you figure out what you're going to do? So all of this is the things that are coming up. Then I think another one that people don't talk about is that we want to automate everything. As we automate everything, that means less and less of the people coming into the industry are learning how to do the basics, because that's how you learn in IT. You learn by breaking stuff. And it's never good to reboot an email server on a Monday morning. I definitely have done that, but I also learned how to recover from that because I was forced to. If there's nobody around to lend a guiding hand to be the mentors to the new generation coming in because either of retirements or getting laid off or restructuring to save money, how do they learn if all they're doing is they're following scripts to create bots? So I think there's a lot of stuff going on.
One aspect we haven't touched on yet, I'd like some insight here. And this is a not so hidden cost, right? We see it when the bills come due, right? So the shift to per core licensing and pricing for software has been pretty disruptive in the software world. What strategies are you seeing companies take to try to adjust to some of that change?
This change, I think, was a long time coming. So that's kind of where my math cheat sheet that I couldn't find after the reboot was about. So I think the per core, per socket thing was coming for a long time, as there were more cores than there ever been before. So I think that licensing change was a long time coming and people should have realized it. And I think what we see with VMware and what they're doing, hopefully it's okay to mention them, is I think they're just carving out a space for who they want their market to be. So if there's a minimum number of cores that you have to purchase before you can meet a license requirement, that's definitely the upper mid and the upper part of the market that they're looking to capture. And they've said that before, that's what they were doing. So having said that, I think having the ability to have a lot of cores is important, because there's all sorts of things you can do with it. You can run more VMs, you can run containers in a more efficient manner. And I think that's what is going on. And I think this is where the experience of people in a data center comes in, understanding what the workloads that they need to support, what's the best use of their servers to support those? Are they able to meet those really large per core requirements by VMware? Do they need to start looking for another virtualization layer? Or are they able to skip virtualization altogether and just use containers? It's just based on the maturity of the organization and the types of workloads that they have, really.
Great. So you've been able to work with a lot of different companies and all these different technologies here. So let's dial in on virtualization and containerization just for a moment here. Clearly, these technologies have enabled big productivity gains to IT in terms of what it allows to automate and how you can get the most out of resources, et cetera, which is always going to be a valuable skill. In this evolving space, what are some of the best strategies for getting the most out of this existing infrastructure? We're paying a lot for it, but it really can deliver a lot more value.
I think this goes back to just having really good data center hygiene. And it starts with planning. And hopefully, you know your workloads and you know the people that you're working for and how you're supplying them things. But then the automation is key. Having the ability to build up and tear down VMs or containers, because it's all software, so you can actually do this infrastructure as code thing. It is mind-blowing. I remember doing Kickstart and Jumpstart, and we thought that was pretty slick. So being able to actually work with your stakeholders and understand when they push something new, that they need to test it. You don't have to build out a testing environment. You can work with them and work with their CI/CD environment and tie your infrastructure as code, build up, tear down, whichever way it's going to that, and really have it run all at one time. That gives you lots of abilities. It gives you the ability to use the infrastructure, the actual space that you have, in a better way. It gives you the ability to make sure that what's being run on every server is what you want running and nothing else. Helps with security, helps with performance, all the rest of it. So I think that's the biggest thing is once you have a cloud-like environment on your private cloud, which is what all the marketing names for this are, then you're able to run it as infrastructure as code. There's all sorts of different companies that help with that. It's something you can potentially do on your own. It's much better to do with a company that's going to help you get that orchestration correct.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to making transitions like this, I mean, things are coming so quickly here and our attention spans seem to be getting shorter by the moment. As you're looking to get into the planning for implementation of these types of technologies, what are realistic expectations for companies? You mentioned a couple here. How quickly can you expect changes to happen and implement new technologies? And what can you do in the meantime to start mitigating some of the impact of the changes that the market is going to either push on you or that you need to adapt to your business?
Yeah, I think this gets back to the data center hygiene. And I think most IT people are pretty good with this. You know that your applications, you know which one are 24/7. You know which ones have the teams that are going to complain the most about any little thing. You know what's going on in your organization. But the way you can look at it, especially with automation, is what could you do that would take things off of your plate? What are the things that are easy to do and safe to do? And how can you build that up and test it? So I think those are all the things, is looking to find some low-hanging fruit to get started with automation. Making sure that you're documenting it in some sort of way, that you're testing it so that, you know, you don't have any unintended consequences that take important required application offline, those kind of things. And then also being able to, instead of everybody doing that and picking their favorite thing they want to play with or picking the thing that they hate the most that they want to automate. The other questions of this aren't just automation, right? You also have the questions of, okay, are there things that will go to the cloud or to a SaaS environment? Who would have thought all the Windows documents and all the Windows like Exchange that most people would be running that as a SaaS? That's pretty wild. Like I wouldn't have thought that 10 years ago that big organizations would do that. So that's part of it too, is how do you look at your entire infrastructure that you have right now? And you know what your five-year plan is from your organization, what they're hoping to have in place. So where is that intersection where you can start what you have now, what you know you're going to have to keep supporting, even though they're telling you they don't want to support it. I'm sure there's little servers that I worked on back in the day that probably on a shelf someplace, still chugging along, right? There's things that you're going to have to keep going. A good place, you know, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, is probably with backups. That's the job everybody has at first. And having backups is a pain, but you really start to understand the workloads and you understand the customers you have internally and what they expect and what they need. That's why you know about the little server sitting in the corner that will always be there in one shape or form. So looking at what is the company's strategic plan for the next 5 years, what are you going to have to support? How can you make sure that there is some level of automation put in all of that? And what's the work backward point to get it there so that it's tested and it's ready to go on day one when they start rolling new things out? So it's just all the stuff we've always had to do, just faster, but with cooler tools.
That's all. Just faster with fewer tools and less money. Yeah,
cooler
that's
tools.
Perfect.
Yeah. Wait, not fewer, cooler yeah. tools.
Okay. All right. Well, yes, that is undeniable. Okay. Let's talk about some of the cool new tools here. I work with a hardware company here. So one of the things we think, how do we make the hardware make the software better here? Is as businesses look to reduce some of their costs, do you see a role for upgrading with higher frequency processors or other ways to reevaluate the infrastructure sizing, again, to get the most you can without overinvesting?
Yeah, you have to do it, right? You think about the little servers that I worked on. Yeah, there's no way the servers are literally running anything anymore. It's just the workload running. But when you think about the power and cooling of a data center, you can't keep bringing in more and more workhorses. You've got to make your horses work smarter, right? You've got to have a way that all of the workflows will run. When you look at some of the machine learning and deep learning applications that are here and have been here for a while, maybe you don't train a large language model. Nobody hardly is going to do that. Lots of reasons people would have machine learning and deep learning in their environment that don't require heavy GPUs and things like that. But they do require the little servers, the whatever's hosting the model, for all those nodes to talk to each other and talk to each other really fast.
And I think that's what you're talking about, is having the ability to buy the chips that make that happen. And yeah, I think you've got to look at what are you building. And we want the workloads to be as efficient as possible and as fast as possible, because that's what was required from some of these new workloads. So you got to do it.
And that's what the business wants, right? They want the infrastructure to be fast and responsive, and it's up to smart people to make it happen for them here. So one of the things that businesses are asking for clearly is, you kind of mentioned here, AI. And not a lot of companies have, hey, yeah, just wheel in those 19 racks of GPU systems, got plenty of power and cooling. Very rare to have that scenario. How do companies make room? And have you seen a common set of strategies for consolidating resources to help be able to handle some of these new workloads? Let's face it, 5-year plan, it was probably not to be AI, right? So how have they adjusted?
I don't know if I've seen any strategies, to be honest, through the customers that I've talked to, but some of the stuff I've read, it's so hard, right? Because we know there's so much hype to get AI. What does that even mean? What are you talking about? So that's one thing I would hope everybody's doing. Like, what do you mean? What are we doing? What actually is happening? Number one, an understanding for whatever the algorithm that you're training. What does it require? What kind of horsepower does it require? How fast does it need to go? How long will it run? Is there things we can do to make that faster and better? We went through all these motions when Oracle, I think, got really big. And one of the things people were wanting to do was virtualize it. And there was a big fight over, can you virtualize Oracle or not? We're kind of in that same situation where, okay, maybe we didn't really, and I'm thinking as a sysadmin, right? Maybe we didn't really get what Oracle needed and how it went, but we had to learn, because in those days it was, we couldn't afford the servers, at least the places I worked. We couldn't afford the servers to run that many Oracle instances, right? So how could you change it? Could we virtualize it? Is that something we can do? And I think understanding the workload helps you make those decisions. And I think the vendors for certain workloads and also can help make those decisions, as can the vendors for the server and the hardware and the chips, like y'all, everything. That all can help understand what's the workload and why should it get a faster chip? Why should it be on this type of storage? And that's something I think that needs to be happening. And I think we're at the stage where the hype around AI is so big that technical people have shut it out. Because it's just a bunch of crap and it's going to die. And this is just people trying to fix the market or whatever. But the thing is, there's so much good that can be done with these different workloads, and they are going to come to a data center near you. And you need to understand some of the real basics of what's going on with them.
Yeah. One of my friends in the CTO roles, he always gets back to the same thing. It's like, until you could tell me about a real use case, we're just talking about, we're hand waving, right? You really got to get to real use cases of real requirements.
Absolutely.
Just like every other workload.
But that's the thing. That's why I mentioned Oracle, because if it's a workload and we stop thinking of it as this magical learning robot, right, then we know as infrastructure professionals, we know how to architect for a workload to run like our constituents want us to run it. So instead of making it magic, let's just make it computer science and get real about it.
Always strong advice. So for our listeners that are looking for more information on some of the solutions and approaches and strategies we talked today, where should they go to find out more?
I'm going to give you some off-the-wall suggestions. Number one, I would suggest Tech Field Day. I'm a Tech Field Day delegate. Tech Field Day records, and we go places and talk to folks like y'all. I think we've had AMD and the vendors, and we ask them a bunch of hard questions. If you don't like the questions we ask, you can talk to us on LinkedIn or on, I'm not on Twitter, I'm on Blue Sky though, and we'll ask a question for you. But number one, start understanding what's going on and get a reality check about what's going on. And my other favorite place to go is the Register. I love reading the Register because they have really great technical articles. So I think those are great. And then another place I write for is Tech Arena. And I think that's a really good place to get really interesting insight from the companies themselves, like hearing from them on the bleeding edge of things. And I think anytime you see that, I really urge you to talk to the person on LinkedIn. Like if you have more questions and need more information, follow them and get that information. This is like the old days of Twitter. There's so much going on. We need to help each other learn.
Absolutely. We can't spend all our time on subreddits. This is great. We're going to put some links into our social post for this. I love the references there. They're all great, balanced, very sober sources of information. We can leave the hype behind. That's great. So really appreciate you sharing this today, Gina. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jim. I had a great time.
My pleasure. And thanks to our audience for listening as we talk tech. Until next time.
Thanks for joining AMD Tech Talk. Find out more about the technologies discussed today at www.amd.com.